Grass-fed, locally raised, 100% organic. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday edition. It just got better. I am joined live via phone by John Nichols from The Nation, friend of ours. John, welcome back, man. Traveling for a while, but back on the terra firma of the United States of America.
Back in the U.S., back in the U.S., back in the USSA.
Well, John, you were missed by me and the audience. I did consider booking you a couple times, but glad to have you back. John, you know, today is a historic day, and the nominee has now been confirmed. She's not yet impaneled on the Supreme Court, but Ketanji Brown Jackson will join the court. John, were you ever in doubt? Was this day ever in doubt that she would actually be confirmed in your mind, sir?
She was such a remarkably qualified nominee, arguably the most qualified nominee in recent decades, that it was hard to see how she wouldn't get united support from the Democrats. And because the Democrats have 50 members of the Senate and then a tie-breaking vote from Vice President Kamala Harris, I always anticipated that this was likely to go through. But it is significant that Judge Jackson received three votes from Republicans, Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, and Mitt Romney. And I think that is maybe not a surprise, but it is certainly a good sign in these incredibly divided times that President Biden came up with a nominee who could not only unite the Democrats, but get three Republican votes.
Well, and John, in no small part, it was the fulfillment of a campaign promise as well. I mean, Joe Biden ran for the presidency saying, you know, given the opportunity, he would impanel a black woman on the court. Promises kept, John.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's super important for Biden because, look, we live in a time when there are such deep divisions that it is essential to kind of mobilize and continually respond to your base, right? You have to get your voters out and you have to keep them enthusiastic. One of the ways to keep them enthusiastic is to keep promises. And for President Biden, I think that there was a combination here. There was that political motivation. There's also the reality that, frankly, if you look back at Biden's history, while it's imperfect, he is somebody who actually came up in the era of the civil rights movement and who has for a long time recognized the vital importance of making our courts and our governance look like America. And so it's not surprising that he kept his promise. It's heartening and it's also encouraging because I do think that there's great enthusiasm for Judge Jackson's nomination. And that's certainly true among black women and certainly true in the black community. But I think it extends far beyond that. I do believe that a tremendous number of progressive Americans and, you know, just thoughtful folks across the country were, you know, genuinely impressed by her when she made her presentation to the Judiciary Committee. So this has turned out to be a positive for President Biden.
John, it's a win for President Biden. Will he see any bump in the polling, do you think? And, I mean, who cares? He's 2 years out. But obviously it's the midterms, John. The midterms are just around the corner. Joe could use some victories here.
Yeah, he could use some victories, and this is a beneficial one. I'm not sure that it's going to move the needle in a big way today or tomorrow. You know, I mean, there are a lot of other factors in play. And, frankly, this has proven to be a pretty fast and relatively, acknowledging the ugliness of some of what the Republicans said on the Judiciary Committee, but a relatively easy nomination fight. So my sense is that you're not going to see a big bump for the president because this confirmation occurred. But what you will see is an addition to the, you know, for lack of a better term, the arsenal of arguments that Democrats can make going into the November election that, you know, they make promises, they keep them, and if they had a bigger majority, they could do even more.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I got my good friend John Nichols returned to the USSA. John, this does not move the needle of the court. Breyer, the retiring justice, was quote unquote a liberal. You know, this new justice, KBJ, is already being described as a liberal. We don't yet know how she'll rule. But, you know, she was a liberal selection, quote unquote, joins the minority liberal bloc. But, John, here's sort of a theoretical for you, sir. The original coup, we've talked about the January 6th coup quite a bit. We've talked about the actions of the former president. You know, what about the failure to ever give Merrick Garland a confirmation hearing? And breaking the sort of democratic norms. John, do you see that as sort of a foreshadowing of what came through the Trump presidency and still continues to this day? You know, you lose an election, you don't like the outcome. You do whatever you have to do through any means necessary.
That's an interesting analysis, because it is true that Mitch McConnell and the Republicans in the Senate did break the norms as regards Supreme Court nominations. They basically started to write a new set of rules, and that had a profound impact. This would be a different court if they had simply followed traditional rules. And so, yeah, I do think there's an argument that the Republican Party has adopted an approach that is much closer to a by any means necessary theory than a follow the standards and practices that have long existed. So that does obviously give grounds for concern, and it becomes a factor in the midterms, because again, the argument can be made that if Democrats lose control of the Senate, Joe Biden will never get another nominee onto the Supreme Court. And that is a serious matter. I'll say one other thing, though, that I think is important. You did, of course, appropriately point out that Judge Jackson is going to replace a so-called liberal justice. But I think that it's always important to understand the dynamics of the court. And as Chief Justice John Roberts has kind of moved toward a modestly more moderate position, there are options on this court that may not have existed in the past to build coalitions and develop relationships. When you have a small number of people, those relationships can really matter. And so I think that Judge Jackson's style, her approach, and her tremendous knowledge of the law may make it possible for her to have an influence that perhaps Justice Breyer didn't have. And so this, even though it's a conservative court, I think this change could be a good one for at least some issues. And I think that's particularly true as regards Bill of Rights concerns, civil liberties, and maybe even criminal justice reform.
John Nichols from The Nation. You were traveling, John, when a lot of the Ginni Thomas stuff came to the forefront. And the reporting came out, the Meadows text. And it would seem very clear that her husband has been conflicted, even in some of the specific executive privilege rulings he made. He was the one in the 8-1, John. So let me ask you, I know that some of our progressive friends, they want to pound a Thomas's ass. They want to pound a flesh. Impeach if you must. Resign now. I think AOC said something to the effect via Twitter. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. John, they all seem like feckless threats. We cannot make the man recuse. We cannot make the man vacate. And short of him getting hit by a bus, I think he's probably Justice Thomas for a good long time.
Well, first and foremost, let's be clear that Justice Thomas did wrong. He should have recused. And that is on him, but it's also on the court. Because the Supreme Court doesn't have a good system for establishing recusal rules. That's a failure on the part of the court. It damages the court. And it's a reform that should be made. That could happen, theoretically, if Justice Roberts were able to get a majority of the court to lean toward or to accept a better recusal system. I'd love to see that. But let's go to this bigger question. I think you're right that asking Justice Thomas to recuse you know, by his own volition, is never going to happen. He's failed to recuse, not just on this case, on these cases that you discuss, but on a host of cases going back to and including the Bush v. Gore case, where Jenny Thomas was actively involved with Bush and Cheney back in 2000. And yet Justice Thomas ruled to make Bush and Cheney the president and vice president. So he's not going to do the right thing. Now, he also obviously is not going to resign. I think the impeachment option, and you know, as you well know, I love impeachment. I think it's an incredibly useful tool and an incredibly important tool. And one of the values of impeachment is, even if you don't succeed in forcing someone off the court or enforcing someone out of the White House, an impeachment process is a very good way to focus on the fundamental issues that are in play and to, frankly, potentially shame and pressure the person that you're discussing. And so I have no problem with AOC and Ilhan Omar and others advocating for impeachment. I think it's a good thing. And I also think that there should be a Senate investigation, inquiry, whether it's in an impeachment context or otherwise, of Justice Thomas, because what he has done is damaging, not just to the court, but frankly to our democracy. You cannot have justices who are ruling in cases involving their close family members or potentially involving their close family members and not have a diminution of respect for the court.
No, you make an excellent point, John. The senators from our home state, both you and I live in Wisconsin, John. Tammy Baldwin, yep. She was a yes. And Ron Johnson, no big shocker, he was a no against this nominee, Ketanji Brown Jackson. I would point out, John, and you know this, that part of his last reelective campaign, Ron Johnson's last reelective campaign, was basically to block the confirmation of Merrick Garland. That was a big part, you know, let the voters decide. Well, he won reelection, and obviously Neil Gorsuch eventually won nomination to the court and was impaneled on the court and helped keep the makeup of the court conservative just in time for Donald Trump's presidency. So, John, I wanted to know, has any of this started sinking in with the Wisconsin voters? Tammy Baldwin handily won reelection. Ron Johnson, at least in the polling, is not very popular. John, do you think there will be any electoral price to pay for his vote in the midterms, talking about Ron Johnson's vote?
Yeah, I think it could have some impact. Remember, Ron Johnson has tried very hard over the years to kind of neutralize his negative or bad image with voters, you know, across the political spectrum, but including voters in the Black community. He's even done TV ads that suggest that he's very engaged and very concerned and such. And so I think here you have a tangible vote by Ron Johnson against a highly qualified, exceptionally well-prepared nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court who happens to be a Black woman. And I do think that has some potential to remind people that Ron Johnson will not do the right thing in any circumstance, and that includes in efforts to create a more diverse and reflective of America, U.S. Supreme Court. So, no, it could have some impact, but I will go back to that core concept. We are a deeply divided nation. We are a deeply divided state. And Johnson is clearly running for reelection with a sort of a base-building strategy, a strategy that is all about mobilizing a very high turnout of very conservative Republicans. And the counter to that is not necessarily to try and switch voters who might be deciding between Johnson and a Democrat, because I don't think there are going to be that many, but more importantly, to mobilize Democratic voters. And my sense is that, again, as we discussed a moment ago, the confirmation of Judge, soon-to-be Justice Jackson, I think does have some positive impact for mobilization of Democratic voters.
John Nichols, my fine guest. John, you're going to stick around, aren't you? One more segment?
I just wouldn't miss it.
Well, that's great, man, because I want to ask you about a couple of locals going down to kiss the ring at Mar-a-Lago. Gableman and Tommy Thompson. More Devil's Advocates. Yeah. My favorite Badger, John Nichols. We'll be right back.
I don't feel like my time here.
The Devil's Advocates, making radio great again.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Trying to do two things at once. My brain doesn't allow me to do that. I'm not multifaceted like my fine guest, John Nichols from The Nation. John, I appreciate you sticking around for a little bit longer, sir, because I got a few more questions for you. John, let's talk about the Wisconsinites heading down to Mar-a-Lago of late to kiss the Cheeto Messiah's ring or ass or whatever you do down there. But Michael Gableman, the Washington Post reported, he was sort of the guest of honor at the fraud-a-thon down at Mar-a-Lago this week, John. And he was embraced by the former president and the paying attendees. But John, what do you think about the appropriateness, and what do you think the chances are you and me and the taxpayers of the great state of Wisconsin paid Gableman's attendance down at Mar-a-Lago?
Well, they... because we're focusing on it, they may decide to come up with another model for, covering the former justice's travels. But we know that he's traveled around the country to other fraud fests, if you will, on the taxpayer dime. So you can rule nothing out. What is important is that, this charlatan claims to be running an independent investigation into the 2020 election. And yet here he is sitting with one of the candidates, taking praise from that candidate, earning a standing ovation, big round of applause from a crowd of people who were involved in promoting a coup attempt. And so it's another reminder that Gableman shouldn't be anywhere near an official investigation, let alone running one. And I do think that, perhaps this is such a shameless move that it might, and I really emphasize that we certainly have no certainty on this, cause Robin Voss to recognize that continuing to pay Gableman huge amounts of money out of the taxpayers' treasury is a terrible move.
Well, it's a terrible move, but no skin off his ass, John. Gableman was... apparently has now been let off the hook for all his deleted text and emails. He had his own little contempt of court action. And Gableman's yep. response after the expert said, well, effectively, it's been 6 to 9 months, and any text that had been deleted are long since off the phone. Well, he's declaring that utter vindication over a liberal Dane County judge. I mean, the Speaker of the Wisconsin Assembly was just held in contempt of court, John, and he's calling that a victory.
Yeah, look, Robin Voss is pretty shameless and also pretty shameful. And you're seeing the evidence of it again and again. The weird part about it is that you're undoubtedly right. I mean, I like to hold out the view that Voss, might somehow be pressured to do the right thing. But as we know, I think he might even be facing a primary challenge from somebody who thinks he's not extreme enough. So the end result is that if you want to get rid of Gableman, I do think that it's a very good move might be to shift control of the assembly.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I got my good friend John Nichols from The Nation magazine. Just a few more minutes. But John, I got to ask you about the perhaps more troubling visitor down to Mar-a-Lago,
yeah.
The former governor of the state of Wisconsin. I don't mean Scotty Wanker. I mean Tommy Thompson, elected 4 times to the governor's office here. And he I was a little excited about the news, John, in some weird way. I think of Tommy Thompson. I hearken back to simpler, less divisive, less polarized times. But the fact that he would consider running for governor again, and one of the first check boxes was to go to Mar-a-Lago, John. I know your other gig, the Cap Times, has got a top-of-the-page editorial on that very topic. I know that this is troubling to many, many people. What's your take, my friend?
Well, look, the reality is that Tommy Thompson has earned a reputation in Wisconsin as a very competent administrator. And his governorship certainly had its controversial moments. And I'll remind you, the Capital Times never endorsed him for governor in the 4 runs he made. But, you know, he managed the state well. He actually did some bold things like establishing Badger Care. Even more importantly, since he has been governor, or since after his governorship, his role at the Department of Health and Human Services during the Bush administration marked him as one of the more moderate members of the Bush administration. And his leadership of the University of Wisconsin system in the last few years has been, you know, it's gotten almost universal high marks. And so you end up in a situation where Thompson has almost an ideal resume, right, to be a nominee for governor of the state. Doesn't necessarily mean that you or I would support him, but it does mean that he's certainly a credible contender. And I do think he undermines that credibility by going down and, you know, doing the now kind of standard bow and scrape with Donald Trump down at Mar-a-Lago. It's embarrassing, frankly. Thompson is a skilled and capable politician. Trump is a pathetic wreck of a man who tries to steal elections. And so I wish that Thompson hadn't made that trip. But I also will tell you from just a pure political analysis standpoint why he did it. If he is even entertaining the idea of running for the governorship and he intends to seek the Republican nomination, he can't do so with Trump actively opposed to him. What he would want, I would think, would be for Trump to stand down, to not make an endorsement and just kind of let the primary go where it would. And so I think that's a big part of why Thompson went there. It's not to let him off the hook. I don't think he should have done it, but I do think that explains why he did.
Do you think the Trump endorsement actually has any clout? I think we'll find out in the case of Purdue and Kemp in Georgia. They've got their gubernatorial primary next month, and I think that Trump's going to be exposed as a charlatan once again. I mean, a political charlatan, in that his endorsement doesn't have the clout it used to. Or do I read the tea leaves wrong, do you think, John?
Well, we don't know, my friend. I do think that that's a bit of a complexity, because there in Georgia, you've got an incumbent Republican governor who's actually incredibly conservative running against a defeated former Republican senator. And so it's a measure and an important one of Trump's political power. But there are going to be a lot of other measures this year. And I do think that Donald Trump's endorsement does carry at least some weight. More importantly, his active opposition, I think, carries weight. We're seeing Republican members of Congress who voted in favor of impeachment deciding one after another not to seek reelection. And I think a big part of that is that they know that if they're on that ballot, they're going to have Trump going after them with everything they've got. Now, the big measure of the power of Trump's endorsement is going to come in the Wyoming primary, where Liz Cheney is on the ballot. And that's going to be a really big deal and a very important measure. We'll see how strong Trump's endorsement is. But still, the bottom line is that I think that whether candidates want his endorsement or not, they don't want him out there on a regular basis trying to tear them to shreds. And
John,
if you want to ask somebody about that, ask Scott Walker.
Got to end it there. John Nichols, my good friend from The Nation. Hour two is next. More Devils.
Well, let's give him credit. At least he didn't spike himself.